tonight, Peter Davenport, and we will observe this night the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, which I think would have to be said to be the second biggest case in ufology after Roswell in 1947. So we've got witnesses, we've got new stuff, we've got a lot of stuff from Peter. It's going to be an extremely interesting program. This hour is going to be open line shortly. Many of you are calling all the time, emailing and asking how I'm doing and so forth and so on. And I'm doing okay, folks. I will say this, which is a little mystery, I suppose, but many other times in my life when I've faced severe adversity of some sort or another, you know, I'm a risk taker. I'm a risk taker. I've always taken a lot of risks. I've had a pretty good nose for it. And usually have walked away with what seemed like a crazy decision. However, it turned out quite well. Can't always know it'll be so, but I've been very lucky in that regard. And I may be preparing to make such a an upside down, just take my life and throw it upside down. And that's all I'll say for now. Let's look quickly at the world news, which is always somewhat depressing. Slain aid worker apparently was tortured. Baghdad, Iraq. An American aid worker taken hostage with three other peace activists was apparently tortured before he was shot in the head and the chest and his body dumped near a railroad line in Baghdad, Iraq. Tom Fox, a 54-year-old member of Christian Peacemaker Teams from Clear Brook, Virginia, was the fifth American hostage killed in Iraq. There was no immediate word on his fellow captives of Britain, two Canadians. So this goes on and on. Threatened civil war there now. Civil war. It'd be interesting if there is a civil war in Iraq. Sunnis, Muslims will just sort of, I guess, stand on the sidelines and wait until they get tired of fighting. It is said that in a civil war, that's all you can do. If people are going to decide to kill each other, you can virtually only stand back and wait until they get tired of killing, as in Kosovo and elsewhere. And they will, eventually. They get tired of it. Frist leads informal GOP poll for 08, so we're already looking at the presidential race. With home field advantage, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist placed first in an informal poll of 2008 presidential hopefuls at a Republican conference Saturday night. The two-term Tennessee senator received 526 first-place votes, or 36.9%, in the Southern Republican Leadership Conference's straw poll sponsored by Hotline, a political digest. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney finished second with 14.4%. Senator George Allen of Virginia third, tied with President Bush, who, of course, cannot seek a third term unless there's a really major change. In Nepal, now check this out, a 15-year-old boy whose followers firmly believe that he is the reincarnation of Buddha. You may have seen him on some specials on Discovery and so forth. Has now disappeared after 10 months of meditation in the jungle there. Followers of Ram Bador Bhajan reported his disappearance and search parties on Sunday split up in the jungles of Bara. It's about 100 miles south of the capital, Kathmandu, to begin investigating. So he's just gone. In a moment, the rest of the news, as Paul would say. Your attention, please, at Dames. Your attention, please, any ham radio operators out there. And your attention, please, everybody else. When I was a novice ham in 1958, long time ago now, we were in modern history, the biggest recorded sun cycle we've ever seen, and it was the most amazing thing I had ever experienced in my life. I was able to talk to people all over the world using 25 watts. That's not, yeah, it's like a 25 watt light bulb, all right? And I can talk to people anywhere in the world 24 hours a day. That's what happens when you have a big, strong mother of a sunspot cycle. And we just haven't had one like it since. Except, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? An announcement from NASA. It is official. Solar minimum has now arrived. In fact, sunspots are all but gone. They are gone. If you look at the solar disk right now, you'll see nothing but sort of orange soul. That's all. Solar flares non-existent. The sun is utterly quiet. But it is the calm before the storm. This week, researchers announced that a storm is coming. The most intense solar maximum in 50 years. The prediction comes from a team led by Matsumi Dikpatka of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. The next sunspot cycle, quoting here, will be 30 to 50% stronger than the previous one, he says. Make that a she. 2 weeks in a row now, if correct. The years ahead could produce a burst of solar activity second only to the historic solar max of 1958. So what they're saying is new research is showing that that we're going to have the biggest one since 1958, maybe as big or even bigger. It says the key to the mystery, check this out, Dick Patke realized 2 years ago, is a conveyor belt on the sun. We have something similar here on Earth called the Great Ocean Conveyor Belt, popularized in the science fiction movie The Day After Tomorrow. I've heard of that movie. It's a network of currents that carry water and heat from ocean to ocean. They have a diagram here showing it. In the movie, the conveyor belt stops and throws the world's weather into chaos. The sun's conveyor belt is a current not of water, but of electrically conducting gas. It flows in a loop from the sun's equator to the poles and back again, just as the Great Ocean Conveyor Belt controls weather here on Earth. This solar conveyor belt controls weather on the sun. Specifically, it controls the sunspot cycle. Solar physicist David Hathaway of the National Space Science and Technology Center explains, quote, first, remember what sunspots really are, tangled knots of magnetism generated by the sun's inner dynamo. A typical sunspot exists for just a few weeks, then decays, leaving behind the corpse of weak magnetic fields. Now enter our conveyor belt. The top of the conveyor belt skims the surface of the sun, sweeping up the magnetic fields of old, dead sunspots. The corpses are dragged down at the poles to a depth of 200,000 kilometers, where the sun's magnetic dynamo can amplify them. Once the corpses' magnetic knots, as they were, are reincarnated and amplified, they become buoyant and float back to the surface. Presto, new sunspots. And so through this method of looking at the conveyor belt, they have determined that we are about to have the biggest solar maximum since 1958. Now, for many of you, that will mean no more than looking at the sky quite frequently in the next many years and noticing that shimmering, beautiful, multicolored aurora that is produced as these monsters hit the Earth. If you're a follower of Ed Dames, you probably are developing a little nervous tic right now, as all of this seems to coalesce around the year 2012. It'll be 2011 or 2012 when we hit solar max, the absolute max. Now, of course, when you get a big solar cycle like this, it begins very quickly. So the good news for ham radio operators and ham radio in general is that as soon as we come out of the pits of the bottom here, it's going to rise very, very rapidly. And you could again be looking at, I kind of always hope that in my lifetime, I would get to experience another solar maximum of the magnitude that we had in 58. And it looks like I might get my chance. Be a good time to work on that ham license, folks. Jittery NASA scientists waited on Wednesday for the most advanced spacecraft ever to send to another planet to make its risky final approach to Mars, where due to return 10 times the data, it'll return 10 times as much data as anything else we've sent out put together. NASA's unmanned Mars reconnaissance orbiter, which has traveled about 300 million miles since leaving Earth in August, is due to enter its most delicate phase today, Friday. It will ease into orbit around Mars, which has defeated, now remember this, Mars has defeated two-thirds of everything man has tried to send there. That means the United States, Russia, two-thirds of what we've sent to Mars has been met with unfortunate circumstance. And in some cases, met with what looked like probes that didn't want it going there. Now, that's speculative somewhat, but there are photographs showing a giant probe just before one of a giant ship of some kind, just before one of our probes was to go into orbit, and then nothing, just static. Pretty interesting story out of Argentina. Ufologist to visit policeman in disappearance case. Now, policeman recovers and confirms having seen aliens. I don't want to be taken for a nut, he told a friend. 2 days ago, he claimed seeing two beings with large red eyes. I hate red eyes. Who gave him telepathic commands. Corporal Sergio Puchetta, visibly recovered from the odyssey, he underwent about 18 hours, in which he claimed to have some contact with aliens, ratified all of his statements yesterday, and through close friends, asked that he, quote, not be taken for a nut. Puchetta remains hospitalized in a ward of the medical clinic of the city's Centeno Hospital, indicating he may possibly agree to newspaper requests for an interview on Monday. Find out what'll happen, or what did happen, rather. The provincial police corporal responded negatively to this newspaper's request to speak to him and obtain his version of the experience he underwent. Through a friend, Puchetta indicated he preferred to be released from the hospital before getting in touch with the press, though he expressed his concerns about having to publicize his experience. So we're going to hear all about this shortly, but apparently a police officer in Argentina was taken. The U.S. government, bracing for the possibility that migrating birds could cause a deadly strain of bird flu to hit North America, plans to test nearly 8 times as many birds this year as we've ever done in the past decade, starting in April. Samples from 75,000 to 100,000 birds are going to be tested for the virus, mainly in Alaska, because that's where they're coming across, as part of a joint effort of the Departments of Agriculture and Interior, along with state fish and wildlife agencies. That's a jump from 12,000 birds tested in 96. So they're really worried. And what if we do get bird flu here? It's likely. I mean, it's shown up everywhere else now, of course, in parts of Europe. So, if the virus is detected in wild birds in North America, we will not do what everybody else has done. There'll be no massive killing of birds to contain it, because experts, including those in the WHO, World Health Organization, and the World Organization for Animal Health and the USDA, agree, that's almost everybody, that destroying birds is not an effective control method. What would happen, one scientist says, is health experts and people involved in agriculture would be put on alert and warned to make sure that poultry are separated from wild birds, but we would not kill them by the millions. North Carolina health officials are looking into the death of a woman who died last week of a flesh-eating bacteria just 3 days after accidentally jamming her hand in a wheelchair while working at a nursing home. Nursing assistant Sharon Bishop, 44 years of age, died February 27th. A doctor said a very rare flesh-eating bacteria may have entered her body through a thumb injury, and she turned from healthy to fatally ill. The picture of health one day, 3 days later, dead. The culprit, a rare invasive form of Group A bacteria, said Debbie Crane, a spokesperson for the State Department of Health and Human Services. The non-invasive form is widespread, is commonly known for causing strep throat, she said. So it's just like strep, except it gets in your thumb. It's kind of like getting bitten by a shark or struck by lightning. It's not something that spreads to the community, at least for now. And speaking of spreading, The Agricultural Department is now investigating a possible case of mad cow disease. A routine test indicated the possible presence of mad cow disease. According to John Clifford, the USDA official, the agency would not say where the animal was from. Just what we need. The cow did not enter the human or animal food chain, said he. The department is conducting more detailed tests at the laboratory in Ames, Iowa. Should have results in 4 to 7 days. The inconclusive result does not mean we found a new case of BSE, he said, giving the abbreviation for the disease's formal name. Inconclusive results are a normal component of most screening tests, which are designed to be extremely sensitive. So I guess we have to worry a little bit about beef. Mad cow makes good argument for those who eat veggies, right? I know, but still I do dearly love my beef. Let us do a few open lines. Let's start here. First time caller line, you're on the air. Top of the night.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
Okay, I got two quick ones for you. One's a spooky. Second one's a spooky. This one, though, I wanted to tell you about. As I said, I'm a security guard in Riverside, California. My name's Dave.
And you're a first time caller?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right.
I've tried to call before, and they couldn't hear me. So, I took it as a first time call. Anyway, long time listener. You've got me through many nights.
Mm.
And my blessings to you, too, Art. Okay, anyway, what happened was we have trailer trucks, flatbeds that it's a building supply company that I'm working with, and we got a guy that comes out with a big tanker, and he fills them up late at night. I work night shift, of course. Well, I was standing there with him, watching him fill up this truck, and so I turn around and look up in the air, and Art, about, I guess maybe, it couldn't have been no more than 300 feet above me, is this craft, okay? And it's triangular shaped, and I can tell it's not really large. It's probably about the size of a Cessna or something, and it's just tracking along very, very slowly, okay?
Mm.
It's utterly silent. I hear him behind me. He goes, "What the bleep is that?"
Hmm.
I says, "I don't know."
You're lucky to be out of line, sir. Security guards are really like big busted women in horror movies when they go to the basement. You guys are just total toast,
Well, I know. Here's what happened. I have a great big light, like a 15 million candle spotlight, right? And he says, "Light it up, man." I says, "Yeah, no, it's not a police copter, so I'm gonna light it up." And I painted the belly of the thing, Art. And here's what happened, okay?
Now, yes.
It's the oddest thing.
Yes.
The light hit the belly, okay, but it didn't, reflect back, so we couldn't really tell any detail. The bottom, I don't know, ate the light. It just kind of dissipated the light,
Mm-hmm.
But it was very quite low enough for me to hit it, right? Well, the thing changed direction. It started tracking around to the right. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm about to hand him this light and run,
it's going to zap the light, right?
Probably here's what I figure happened. It turned around to see what we were and figured, okay, they can't be intelligent because, here we are with an utterly silent craft, probably running on, a magnetic field, and these guys are going to paint us with a light and they're unarmed. Okay, let's just keep going, Anyway, so they left. But now here's the odd thing about it. Another odd thing was that partially trained air traffic control. So I know that most of every continental United States craft has to have a port and starboard light. Green and red light, so another pilot can tell which way that craft is going.
Correct.
Okay, they also have a strobe. This had neither of those. All it had...
Well, why would an alien craft have a strobe?
Right, I'm just saying, I that set it in my head that it wasn't, something, that was at least not configured properly. I mean, the government could do whatever they want, but in any event, it had a peach-colored outline, okay? Very, very faint. But you know what, Art? We watched that we could see it until it disappeared over the horizon. I mean, it was odd because that light was so dim and so pastel, but we could see it all the way until, and there was other crafts in the air, and nothing made any move toward it, including police choppers. They got a police chopper that goes around, over the, industrial areas.
Yeah, well, anyway, okay. Oddly, these things happen in, not just one, but many. In fact, later tonight, as we talk to you about the Phoenix Lights, you're going to hear that it really wasn't just Phoenix. That's one of the first things to know. And then 2 or 3 months went by, And just like somebody threw a switch, just like somebody said, okay, it's time to cover this, all three networks, can you imagine the coincidental value of something like this? All three major U.S. networks on the same, the very same night, acted as though the Phoenix Lights had just happened, and it was a major national story, appearing then, of course, in newspapers and all over the place, but it was just like somebody waited 2 months and said, okay, let's tell the story now. Let us continue to probe what awaits us in the lines, on the lines, wildcard line, rather. You're on the air, top of the morning. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. If you're talking to me, I called you.
Yes, I'm talking to you.
Yes, sorry. This is Marina here in town.
You mean in Pahrump?
Yes.
In Pahrump? Listening to what?
Oh, you want to know. Ramona on KNYE.
KNYE. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. Everybody gets plugs when you're calling from
your
apartment.
Anyway, I apologize for when you answered the phone. I have asthma, and I had a slight asthma problem when you answered the phone.
Very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, it's not a fun thing to have. I've had it all my life, so I absolutely understand where you have been.
So what's up?
Oh, what's up? Well, I think it's interesting you're talking about snow and Pahrump. I've been here for 7 years. I've been waiting for it to snow here so I get a snowball big enough to throw it at one of your antennas.
Uh-huh.
You have the coolest antennas.
I do have antennas, that's true.
Yeah. How's that one doing, the Tesla one, the one with the 13 poles?
Those would not be poles, ma'am. Those are towers. And
yes, sir.
I would not call it a Tesla antenna. I don't know what the hell's going on with that antenna. If anybody wants to do any serious research on that antenna, you're more than welcome to. There is a consistent 300-volt charge on that antenna. It has been ever since I put it up. It's there in clear weather. When foul weather comes, it's even more. But on clear, windless, beautiful days, you can continually get 300 volts, and the rise time is can't even be calculated. It's so fast. You can sit there, and I've got a knife switch on it. And you can go, and you get a big blue arc every time you do it. So one of these days, somebody's going to come and do some research and figure out for me what it is going on with this antenna. I surely do not know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Okay, I have got a theory of how we got down here to Earth. Okay. All right. First, Adam and Eve were sent down here, and their job was to procreate and build the Great Pyramid.
Wait a minute. I don't think Adam and Eve were told to build the pyramid, right?
Yes, they were.
They were?
They were told to procreate.
Here, I thought that was, well, I know they procreated, but
okay.
I mean, it was the Egyptians quite, that okay. would have been a whole lot of procreating later.
Okay. Well, anyway, the pyramid here on Earth and the pyramid there on Mars lined up, the planet stopped, hence your ice age. And then that caused a great storm on Mars, which brought a big old funnel cloud and took all the water and sucked it off of Mars and shot it down to Earth, landed on Earth at Mariana's Trench. That's what caused Mariana's Trench.
May I ask what support you have for this very interesting outlandish theory?
Just something I came up with.
So you just, like, thought it up?
Just thought it up.
So there was a big funnel cloud. I mean, it's Mars. You say Mars stopped, or Earth
stopped.
I see. Then a big funnel cloud came, and all the water that was on Mars drained into Earth.
Drained into Earth.
Uh-huh.
And there hit on Earth at Mariana's Trench. It created Mariana's Trench.
Yes.
All right. That in turn caused the Great Flood.
Great Flood. Yes, it would do that.
Which is why you have water levels so high up.
Yes.
Okay. And as far as transporting the citizens or the people, I don't know, maybe they climbed inside the water or something and froze right along with it.
Huh.
So,
sir, what's your diet like?
I'm a truck driver, so it's pretty...
catch as catch can, right?
Yeah.
I see. All right. Well, keep those eyes on the road.
Yeah. Thank you for not shriveling up.
I'll see
when you quote unquote retired.
I'll see you later. Okay. Oh, man. Too many miles on the road. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Wow, you have an interesting time tonight.
Yeah.
This is Edson, and I'm in Los Angeles, a suburb called Sund. And it's not very sunny here. It's cold here. We had a little snow earlier, and it hasn't snowed here in 57 years.
It snowed in L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very briefly.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot of traffic jams, a lot of people wondering what that white stuff was coming out of the sky.
I'm sure when five consecutive flakes hit a highway in L.A., 13 die.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I want to talk about the 150th birth anniversary of Nikola Tesla this year.
Tesla again, yes.
Yeah, 2006. And there are some celebrations throughout the world, but when is there really going to be a Tesla movie?
Actually, you know, I've heard they're working on a movie about Tesla. Now, I don't know any of the details, but I've heard very strong rumors they're actually doing it.
Oh, great. Well, he was such a, you know, a genius, and some people say that he was an alien or had some type of alien influence or something like that, but his genius, you know, made our modern world radio control, and there should be some, well, maybe a Tesla roundtable. Maybe the coast to coast could have a Tesla roundtable.
Well, what would be interesting to do, I think, with Tesla would be to separate fact from fiction. Tesla is reputed to have done many things that I think he has not done. He did many wonderful things, many amazing things, and of course many things we'll never know about because the government rushed in and took everything, you know, all his documentation and work. And so we're free then to imagine just about anything, and, you know, he's attributed with making buildings shake and cities shake and earthquakes, and I think not all of that is true. So what would be of real value, if it could be done, and if we could get the right people, would be to validate what Tesla actually did do and separate the myth and the man. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, how are you?
All right.
Oh, good, good. Hey, I wanted to make a comment. You know, I was thinking about the disclosure, the UFO disclosure, and why they still have it going on and why we haven't been told the truth. You know, I was thinking, what if they were taking the technology, reversing it, and then selling it to the big companies, and basically making this deal, you know, as it goes, because it seems to be that the elected government isn't the permanent government, you know? And if
I don't rule out what you're saying. That's essentially what Colonel Corso said that he did, sir. Do you recall?
Oh, yeah, I did. I do believe hearing that on your...
Oh, yes. I interviewed Colonel Corso a number of times. And it was quite remarkable. He said that he was given access to a drawer, his word, of technology that was obtained after the Roswell crash, and it was his job to integrate that into American industry. And I recall all kinds of claims, like lasers and other things that came from the Roswell crash.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yes, it is. I mean, he was an older man who had, in my opinion, nothing to gain from doing the interviews that he did with me. And I rather believed him. I don't know whether any of you have had the opportunity to hear the Colonel Corso interviews, but if not, they should be immediately resurrected from the archives, and we should definitely make them available for you to hear. That would be a suggestion coming from me. They were very important interviews, and, you know, when you get somebody his age and he knows it's near the end of his life, you rather expect to get the truth, and I think we did hear the truth. So those would be very important interviews for you to review. A wild card line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Joey in Indio, California.
Hi, Joey.
I hope you don't decide to retire again because, I've missed you for a long time.
No, it's not going to be that. But I'm going to do something rather radical. I'll leave it at that. Don't worry, I'm not retiring. Anyway,
all right. I have a question. What do you think it would take for society to collapse? Like if terrorists started picking off people in small little towns, do you think that would do it, or
no?
It's gonna have to be something major again.
No, that would not do it. What would do it though, and could do it, would be really the smallest thing in a way. For example, a dirty bomb. People say that's not small. In a lot of ways, it is small, sir. A dirty bomb is just radioactivity packed with, explosive to scatter it around, and it really wouldn't kill very many people at all, but the resulting panic from that happening would kill a whole bunch of people. So it would depend. Terrorists could do things. You know, our economy is rather precarious, as was proven by 9/11. Of course, it did recover, so you could argue it's robust in another way, but anything that would crash the economy, I think, would do the trick.
Right, because I'm a truck driver, and I think if something like that happened, I think a lot of truck drivers would be like, you know, I got to go home and defend the home front. And if freight stops moving.
Well, what did we learn from New Orleans, sir? All those policemen who chucked it in and just went and, you know, took care of their families or just plain left or whatever. That's going to happen in that scale of an emergency. Public service workers are human beings, too. They're going to take care of their own.
Right, yeah. Well, let's hope it doesn't happen, but everybody should get prepared for
it. Let's hope it doesn't, but everybody should be prepared for the possibility. People take oaths, and those oaths are important, but when it really comes down to it, how many of you would say that you would not take care of your loved one? That you would perform your public service without a thought to what's going on at home, the children, the wife? The rest of it, how many of you could honestly say, and I mean dig down deep for this one, and you would not save your own family first? I think not too many, or I think half maybe. So that in mind, if there was a national emergency of that scale, I think what that gentleman suggested and what we observed in New Orleans would be repeated. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, this is Mark in Atlanta. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about DVDs a couple of weeks ago, I think, HD and that kind of thing.
Oh, Blu-ray.
And I tried to call you. How about this? I'm looking at a technician holding what appears to be a DVD in his hand. I can almost see through it. It looks butterscotch in color.
Yeah.
Enphase Technologies, holographic disc, can store 40 times as much data as a DVD, or nearly 300 times as much as a CD. Holographic technology.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, what's coming out shortly is Sony's Blu-ray, and then there's a competing technology called HD DVDs. I hadn't heard of what you're talking about, but yeah, we're at the precipice of a gigantic change in this country, a big one.
Well, it talks about it. A regular DVD does one bit when it's recording. This sucker does 1. Well, let's see. If flash stores 1.2 million bits of data, that is amazing.
Yeah.
This was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on December 11th, 2005.
Yeah, all of these advances are astounding. And what it's going to mean, of course, is eventually holographs and all kinds of things that were, you know, Star Trek-ish. And it's all going to be real. Perhaps not in our lifetimes, but we are laying the groundwork for it right now. There's simply no question about it. Someday, the holodeck is going to be real. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, Steve, Northern California.
Hey, Steve.
KEX out of Oregon.
Yes, sir.
50,000 large.
Yes.
I want to tell you that 3 or 4 months ago, they discovered 2 juvenile tyrannosaurs fossilized with feathers around their necks.
Feathers?
Feathers.
How big were these?
They were, one was 6 feet, one was 7 feet. They were juveniles.
There was a legitimate wire story, sir, not many years ago.
You don't need to call me sir. Dummy will work.
Well, no, you're not a dummy. Honestly now, a legitimate wire story that a guy had found 2 miniature Tyrannosaurus rexes in Nevada, had one of them stored in a metal tool shed, and the damn thing bore a hole right through it and got away. He had the other one and was going to supply pictures. It was just a whale of a story.
Yes, but Art, that's nonsense. this is a real story.
No, it wasn't nonsense. It was a legitimate... there was a photograph of the guy with the thing in his hand.
But there are no tyrannosaurs alive today, Art.
Well, I'm okay.
But they found the two fossilized ones with feathers around their neck. 2 years ago, they discovered unfossilized tyrannosaur tissue.
That'd be enough to do DNA.
Exactly. And I've talked to George probably three times, and I can't get anything done. The guy
What is it you want done?
Well, I'd love to have a show about dinosaurs, because today's dinosaurs are not your father's dinosaurs. And the guy to talk to, his name is Robert Backer, B-A-K-K-E-R.
All right. Well, you send me an email. And
I don't have a computer.
You don't have a computer.
This guy is a PhD. He's a...
You mean you can't go to a library, sir? A library and get to a computer?
Yeah, it's too far away.
I hate computers anyway. You hate... Why?
Because they're just a real pain. I don't enjoy being on them. They're stressful.
Really?
I don't like having my face a foot and a half away from a CRT screen.
Well, you use an LCD.
Well, I'm just one of those guys that just...
they're evil. Computers
but
are
no,
evil.
No, it's not that they're evil. It's just that I don't need them.
Well, actually, I beg to differ with you, but you're going to need a computer. If you want to participate in this day and age, you have to be computer literate. So struggle. Make an exception. I can't, you know, do it here. It's something I'll have to research. So you're going to have to get to a computer somehow. Send me email. And by the way, to do that, I'm artbell@aol.com. Or I'm artbell@mindspring.com. A-R-T-B-E-L-L at mindspring. MindSpring.com. Love to get your emails. Reading them all these days. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hello. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
This is Wade. How are you tonight?
I'm okay.
Oh, I'm calling you from Tega Bay over in South Carolina, you know. And I just wanted to say I'm calling you from the Super Federation of the United Galaxy. I'm aboard their craft right now, and they wanted me to call you and say, how are you doing there tonight, you know?
You're going to hurt your throat if you keep that up, you know?
Oh, no,
Wait a minute, I hear another one in the background. Oh, no, you turned up your radio.
Oh, my radio's on. I got to turn that down there. They were having me talk about things, and it's real nice to finally get a hold of you, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Turn your radio off.
Oh, it's off now.
All right. Okay, good. How am I? I already indicated I'm fine. Now, what else do you have, since you're from another galaxy? Is that correct?
No. They take me up in their spacecraft all the time, and we, you know, they do kind of experiments on me sometimes.
Yes. Oh, yes?
I mean, I kind of like it. No, it's just, I get real scared sometimes, and I don't know if I should tell the police, but they'll just put me away in some kind of an institution, you know? And I don't want anybody to put me away and take my children from me, you know? My children, I don't know what to do, sir.
Uh-huh. Well, I would say, I don't know, take it slow.